Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much, man. Just, enjoying the last few weeks of the NBA season. Interested to see who's actually going to pull it out this year. It seems like it's wide open. It's been kind of a strange year. Lots of scoring, which I think we're going to be talking about a little bit more in the future. But tonight we are going to have our long-awaited final episode looking at the Hall of Players, Hall of Famers, the Hall of Players.
Definitely. Well, it is. It's you're not wrong. You're not right, but you're not wrong. So.
There you go. Exactly. That have played for each NBA franchise. Of course, obviously, you know that Shaquille O'Neal played for the Orlando Magic and the Los Angeles Lakers, but you might have forgotten. Oh, yeah, he played here for the Boston Celtics, or ones that are a little bit more obscure that are fun to talk about. So some minutiae in here. And part three, we are going to talk about the NBA. Since right around the time of the merger, one team is actually just before that merger, but that basically the post-merger era of the NBA, which is basically now more than half of the NBA's history, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And I think it should be noted as well for people that were following along with the other two episodes of this series, that we do have a new Basketball Hall of Fame class as well, the 2023 finalists. So
it's not the class; it's the finalist four.
Oh, the five. Right. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
So, although I believe all five people within.
It seems like it'd be a tough class if you're like, nah, right. Sorry, Greg Popovich. We just don't see enough in the resume to get you in there.
Yeah. Sorry.
I don't know, Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. Right.
Your career really tailed off there. He's like, what?
Right. I mean, you said you were three alphas, but honestly, two and a half alphas at best.
Right. So. You guys promised like six or eight championships and you've only won two. Right. So we got to call a spade here, pal.
We do.
And that Bulls run. No, I agree. No. I'm in agreement with the Hall of Fame committee that because Dwayne Wade played on the Bulls and the Cavaliers, and played so horribly on both those teams that he does not belong in the basketball.
Oh, right? So, wow.
Man, it's bold. It's bold. But I mean, you have to weigh the good with the bad, too. And if it's going to be that bad, it takes away some of the good years, too. So I'm sorry. Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The facts of life taught us this, that you have to take the good and the bad.
Right. You only take the good with the Hall of Fame. Well, let's take the bad, you know?
You take the bad, too. Yeah, exactly. Yes. So the five that have NBA ties, who are among the finalists: Pau Gasol, Dirk Nowitzki, Tony Parker, Dwayne Wade, Greg Popovich. I'd be very surprised if any of them did not make it. I guess I'm not like 100% sure that they're going to put in Tony Parker. I would imagine so. But I think everyone else is pretty much slam dunk. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, we will we'll give a little bit. All these players have associations with these with the current teams we're going to be talking about. So we'll talk about them all a little bit. But first, we are going to start with the Utah Jazz. Again, technically pre-merger, but just right before, and everyone else is post-merger. So the illustrious Hall of Famers who have played for the Utah New Orleans Jazz, we got Bernard King, played 19 games in the 1980 season. Not a good situation for either one. Had to go into rehab. Ended up reviving his career later, but not a great spot for him at that time. Not a great spot for that franchise who just moved to Utah. Walt Bellamy played one game for the expansion Jazz in 1975. He had enough in New Orleans after one game. Was like, yeah, peace out. I'm old. I don't want to be
this
anymore.
Place kind of stinks. Yeah. And I'm done playing the NBA too. He looked around and said, you know what?
Yeah.
Lots I've of had jazz, a good but, life, but yeah, I think good. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So
I think I'm all right. Yeah. Nice. It's just, I mean, I guess he probably had a couple more years in him. I mean, he got 6 points and five boards in 14 minutes. Like, that's still
there you go. Exactly.
It's not a bad game. And he had averaged like 13 you know, points per game the year prior. I think, what did New Orleans do to this man? Like, good God.
I don't know.
He was just like, nope.
Yeah.
Done.
Maybe just like, yeah, I'll hang out and I'll, you know, I'll listen to some jazz, but I'm not.
I don't know. It was probably just like, I mean, there was very few more depressing teams than New Orleans Jazz during, you know, that run where he's probably there. It's probably this big arena with like 10 people in it. And he's just like, I don't need this shit. Like, I'm good.
Yeah. And they weren't depressing. Yeah, they just started. That was their first game.
Well, so. It didn't get great. Yeah. It didn't. I would disagree. I think it was depressing from day one. But
all right.
But fair enough. Okay. But he did. Yeah. It should be noted. Went out on top. Maybe this was it too. He hit all of his shots and all of his free throws and was like, you know,
That's it. Why not?
You know, get that overall win the overall field goal percentage. You know, higher. Yeah. Than, you know, so he's like,
right. You got to think of those career marks. You know, he's in the Hall of Fame. You can't argue against. Yeah, we got Rick Adelman, of course, who's in as coach. Also played for the 75 Jazz. Mm-hmm. We got Spencer Haywood, 34 games with the 1979 New Orleans Jazz. Last year they were in.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's the Jazz. They're so depressing.
Right. Yes. We got Gail Goodrich, played 182 games from 1977 to 1979. Pete Maravich, of course, most famous Jazz, you know, pre-Stockton Malone, of course, played 75 to 80, mostly in New Orleans, did play a little bit in Utah, which did not go well. Adrian Dantley, who helped revive give some indication that they were actually good at one point.
Actually competent for the first time.
So made them actually a good team, did a lot of scoring, and brought respectability to the Utah Jazz from 1980 to 1986. And then, of course, we got John Stockton and Karl Malone, who did a lot in that time. I will talk a little bit more about them in our what-if scenario. So Hall of Famers who were drafted or acquired but never played for the Jazz. We got a big one, Dominique Wilkins.
Yeah, thank God. I know they were in Utah by that point, but I hope we didn't get a similar situation where he's just like looks around and is like, I'm good. I'll figure something else to do with my life. Like, look, they could have robbed us, or it could have went the other way, and it could have been really awesome if Dominique Wilkins was on the Jazz and whatnot. But that's always an odd one. The Dominique Wilkins, a Jazz player, but never quite made it over there, which is probably for the better. Atlanta was a much better spot for one.
It did fit pretty well, you know, being the University of Georgia guy. So. All right, we got the possible future Hall of Famers who have played for the Jazz. We don't actually have a lot. Joe Johnson is right at 50%, who played, of course, for basically every team in the NBA. We've talked about him already a whole lot. And then other guys you might think about on this list. Rudy Gobert is about 20%. Darren Williams, 9.5%. Donovan Mitchell right now is at about 4%. I mean, Donovan Mitchell's it would take a lot, but like I could see him. He's still young enough.
He's definitely on that path. I mean, the problem is you would have probably said the same thing about Darren Williams, but it does seem Donovan Mitchell, barring you know, losing his legs like Darren Williams, where he just woke up one day and was like, my legs don't work anymore. No, Donovan feels like he's going to continue to add to that and add to that and add to that. And you would probably say the same about Rudy Gobert, but you know, given how things have gone in Minnesota,
and Gobert's a lot older too. I mean, Gobert's Mitchell's like 25, 26. I mean, it's up in the air, but like, he certainly can do it.
I don't think it'll take long before Donovan's probably eclipsing Rudy Gobert. Maybe a couple more years of Donovan, especially the year he's had and the years it seems like he will have in Cleveland, you know, with everything working out as well as it has. He feels like he's going to rise up that ranks a bunch.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Then we got Andre Kirilenko, Carlos Boozer, who are both under 1%. Kirilenko, I could kind of see, you know, with the international experience. I don't know. It's been a while, so you would kind of think if they would have put him in, but he might, you know, be like a veterans committee guy or international guy at some point. I could see that, but you know, other than that, probably not good again.
Yeah, really cool career, but yeah, probably not to that level. And Boozer's an interesting one because I do wonder if, like, you know, there's not a lot of guys that are in there because, like, you know, we laugh at some guys and it's like, oh, why is that? You know, like Mitch Richmond's one that I was bringing up. I'm like, but like you look at his college stuff and it's like, oh, okay, that I'll buy that in a little bit. Boozer is a guy that, like, if he got in, it would be like very, very, very much on the back of his college career, which was really good. He had a very, very good college career. I mean, it's not our show, obviously, to speak on that, but you know, not something we do. But he had a very, very good college career, very, you know, memorable college career. Would that be enough to get him in? He's going to need a lot of work there. You know, under 1%. It's not that good of a college career to get him in there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there aren't really that many guys who are not who, like, if you took their college career out, you wouldn't put them in. There's like, a very small number of guys. Like, there are certainly guys whose college career bolsters them, like, you know, Bill Walton. Like, Bill Walton,
of course,
one of the greatest college players, and had an excellent NBA career, but cut short, you know, because of the injuries, of course. But and like Ralph Sampson, you know, maybe a couple of guys, and mostly it's like they were great in the NBA, but they didn't have longevity because of injuries. So that's a relatively small number of people. It's more the college coaches who get it easy, you know.
Right,
you,
for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. What if scenario? Best what if scenario? So for me, I'm gonna go like, all right. Let's say the team decides on picking a new name instead of the Jazz. It's more appropriate for Utah. So there's the story that basically, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm going to share it anyway. That basically the reason that they kept the Jazz name is because they, you know, so strapped for cash or so cheap that they like couldn't afford or didn't want to buy new uniforms. So they stuck with the same Jazz uniforms that they'd had in New Orleans and then obviously kept. So, you know, I don't know what names are appropriate. You maybe like the Peaks, the Settlers, the Pioneers, the Stars, which like wouldn't necessarily be more appropriate, but obviously would have continued the legacy of the ABA team, the Stars, who were, you know, were really good in the 70s and had, you know, some level of popularity in the city. So, and yeah, also like the other one is like what we already talked about, Dominique Wilkins coming to the Jazz. Yeah, Dominique Wilkins and Adrian Dantley on the same team. Would that have been cool? Probably. A lot of scoring.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dominique may have punched him out at one point, Adrian taking some shots and Dominique's like, I'm Dominique Wilkins, so you can pass me the ball every so often if you want, AD. But, you know, you do you. But, you know, a few passes would be nice.
Maybe they're just like another version of the Nuggets where they just, you know, they don't care about defense and they just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that would have been cool. No, I mean, undoubtedly two cool dudes on a pretty cool team there. As far as the Jazz name, I mean, it's weird that like it doesn't make any sense and it's dumb and like, they should have changed it. But like it also is.
Yeah.
I don't want any other name, though. Like the idea of them being like the Utah Settlers or whatever. And I'm just picking a random name. Sure. I don't know. It just doesn't. The Utah Jazz just kind of works for me. I don't know why. And it's probably just because that's how I grew up and that's what I know. But I don't want them to be a different name. I've kind of learned to love the Utah Jazz. I don't know why.
Yeah, I do kind of like the whole like the name that doesn't make any sense with the city. I kind of like there's a vibe about that I kind of like. Obviously, the Lakers, no one even really thinks about that with the Lakers anymore, just because it's such an iconic, you know, idea of a franchise. You know, people don't think about the incongruity there. But Utah Jazz. I mean, you know, there is a little bit of like, art form, a black art form going.
There's got to like, be one some of the jazz in Utah, right? Like, there's got to be somebody that has played jazz, and I agree that it doesn't fit with. It fits a little bit more with a percussion based city like a New Orleans, but there's got to be. Yeah. Some jazz in Utah, right? There can't be no jazz.
Probably, yeah. I would imagine so. But yes, I mean, I'm all good with the Utah. I accept that's the world we live in, and of all the problems that we have in the world, I'm not going to get too upset about that one.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. But the Pioneers and the Settlers, that would have been the Peaks would have been okay. But that, you know,
yeah,
that's fine. So my what if scenario, we talked about this on the show a bunch, but. My thing was been how cool would it have been for the early 90s Jazz team to have made a finals at least once, or at least be more competitive in the West in terms of making it deeper into the playoffs. We've talked about that before. Like, we were very close. We were a lot closer than I think a lot of people think to the 1992 finals being the Bulls versus the Jazz, which probably would have gone the same way as 97 and 98. Probably. I still think that Bulls team probably wins in 92. That was a great, great Bulls team. Yeah. But it would have been a cool series because I think the problem that when Malone and Stockton get there in 97 and 98 and the team that's around them, they're just like, they're old. You know what I mean? They're like a gritty old team. And the idea is that they're beating up on a weak West in the late 90s or whatever. But they were so much more dynamic in the early part of the decade. And I think that would have been a lot of fun to see Karl Malone when he was still able to really fly and Stockton when he was still pretty fast. And that's not taking anything away from 97 and 98, you know, Stockton Malone, who were still very, very good players. But it's just a different vibe from that 92 team. And it feels like people seem to identify only with the old Malone and the old Stockton, not necessarily the guys that were super dynamic. And that was a fun team. That 92 Jazz team, that early 90s Jazz team was a lot more fun than the 97, 98 team, which was Malone and Stockton slowing it down to a crawl. And then like Howard Eisley and Greg Ostertag, like that team wasn't that fun. It wasn't like, go back and watch those games. They're not that fun. They're a very not fun team. Hornacek is, is fine. But yeah, that 92, they're dynamic. They're running around. They're playing a fun brand of basketball. I think that would have been a really, really cool series to see happen. And it was very close to happening as well.
Yeah, just worth noting. So if you look at like the 92 Jazz, you know, they played at like a pace of 95.5. And the 97, 98 Jazz both played at like 90, 89. So I assume that's possessions per 100. So obviously slowed. I mean, the whole league slowed down between those years. And like the mid to late 80s Jazz, that's like 101, 103, 105. Obviously different roster at that point. But yeah, the younger Jazz it was more aesthetically fun team, as you said. Like, yeah, Stockton and Malone both were obviously younger, more athletic. Malone was just a beast in transition and went up and down the floor. And, you know, you watch some Karl Malone like highlights when he's younger and you're like, oh my God, you know, the way that he could dunk and the way that he could move. And yeah, he continued to be a great player, but the late 90s Jazz were pretty lame.
They were.
Early 90s Jazz were at least, a more fun aesthetic team. But
I mean, Malone, the idea that people kind of attribute Malone to like the bald guy who's just strong and just backs people down and does like, you know, this little turnaround jumper thing or whatever. Stinks. Cause man, you watch him at 1991, 1992, and you're like, holy crap, sure. That guy that's like, you know, he's still strong and he's still tall, but he's also dunking all over everybody and running the floor and doing all that sort of stuff. And a lot of people, kind of your casual, you know, basketball fans or whatever, people that aren't, you know, maybe listening to this show, don't necessarily attribute Karl Malone to being as good as he was, you know, as early in his career as he was. So
yeah,
I think it would have been fun.
Sure. Yeah. In a weird way, Malone, I think, is like kind of historically underrated now. I'm not crying over that, but
for sure.
But I do think,
certain aspects have definitely attributed to him being underrated. Right. One of those we don't necessarily disagree with any of those, I do think that's because like when he was on the biggest stage, he was just this like lumbering and still good. Like, again, he won an MVP in like 1999 or 2000, right? He was still very, very good, but like it was a different style and a different aesthetic, and it wasn't as fun. Where that 92 Bulls Jazz, man, that would have been a fun series. Yeah. And hell, same thing for the Bulls in 97, 98. They're not that fun anymore, but 92 Bulls, they're awesome. They're fun. So just would have been a much more fun series. Not taking anything away from those series, which are, you know, iconic for the reasons, you know, multitude of reasons, but it just would have been a different vibe. And I think it would have been cool to kind of compare and contrast. Hey, here's the, you know, these teams face each other 5 years ago in the finals, and here's what they looked like, and here's what they look like now. And, you know, in that time, this guy's done this, and that guy's done that, and this guy's retired and he's come back. So it just sort of been cool, and it was very close to happening too. So I think that's, you know, what I've always enjoyed about it.
Absolutely. All right, ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey for me, I'm gonna go Bernard King, maybe Spencer Haywood, you know, because, you know, either one, you get the irony there. And I feel like you're proving some cool credibility there. I guess, you know, like things went a little bit better for Spencer, so I guess I'm gonna go with Spencer in
that's
for,
fair.
My Hall of Fame hipster, yes,
So for me, I'm going hipster, I'm going Pistol Pete for that one, because what the way I do the hipster one is it's like it's a little too on the nose, you know what I mean? Like, this guy thinks he's, oh, I got a Pistol Pete Jazz. It's like, all right, you know, everybody knows Pistol Pete played for the Jazz. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that cool. Where the cool kid, he's gonna come with a different jersey, which I, you know, hey, I'll just do it right now. Bernard King, because you're going to roll up with a Bernard King Jazz jersey and someone is going to say, excuse me, what is that? Like, why do you have a Bernard King Jazz jersey? That's ridiculous. And you're going to say, haha, but it's not, because Bernard King did play for the Jazz. And then you know, a great conversation, a nerdy conversation, but a great conversation that you're going to have with and discuss, you know, Bernard King's very short run with the Utah Jazz. And, me and this person will be friends forever now, because, you know, I'll respect that they knew that Bernard King played for the Jazz.
Bernard did not have a lot to say about his Jazz run when we interviewed him. So so he did not, that one was, he did not speak a whole lot about that. Yeah, I mean, you played with Pete Maravich and Adrian Dantley, like, for a little bit. Like, was that interesting? But yeah, I didn't seem like you really.
Let's talk about the Knicks. Did you know I played for the Knicks? Yeah, all right. Let's talk about that. I do. Yeah.
Ah, all right. Fair enough. So yeah, well, I went with Maravich as the cool kid jersey. I see your point. It depends on how you define the hipster and the cool kid vibe. I get where you're going there. So. All good with that. All right. Next, we have the Dallas Mavericks. So we've got the Hall of Famers who played. Dennis Rodman had 12 games with the Mavericks in the year 2000. Alex English, 79 games toward the end of his career. Tim Hardaway, 54 games in 2002. Adrian Dantley, 76 games between the 89 and 1990 seasons at the end of his career as well. Jason Kidd, two separate stints with the Mavericks, of course, early on in the mid-90s, and then later on in culminating with their championship year, 500 games with the franchise, 39 win shares total. And Steve Nash is your, at the moment, your win shares leader for all Hall of Famers in the for the Dallas Mavericks, 42.7 and 408 games. You know, had obviously a great stint that helped establish his career before he went back to Phoenix and was the and furthered one of those MVPs and furthered his Hall of Fame case.
Yep. So,
and then Hall of Famers drafted or acquired but never played for the franchise. So Mark Price, not a Hall of Famer, but 18.2% probability in the Hall of Fame. He is the closest to being at that point. So I kind of find that interesting.
Yeah, I if you had told me before this, hey, is Mark Price in the Basketball Hall of Fame, I would have said, yeah. Does he feel like he should be in the Hall of Fame? Like, I'm kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised that he's not in, but I'm also surprised, you know, like, it's one of these weird things where it's okay that he's not in, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but I'm also like, really? Mark Price isn't in the Basketball Hall of Fame? Are you sure?
Yeah, he was a four-time All-NBA.
Yeah, right? Doesn't he feel like he should maybe be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, he had one first team all NBA as well. Slightly surprised, I guess, now that I think about it. I would not have expected that many all NBA nuts. There probably aren't like a lot of people who have four or more all NBA.
No, that's an interesting note. I'm gonna write a note about that of guys who have four or more, you know, all NBA teams and either are not in the Hall of Fame or whatever. Cause that's that does seem like a lot.
Yeah, that's not a big club, so that's interesting. Right there. So yeah, we'll more to come on that. I mean, he'd have a super long career, but you know, was obviously still a pretty effective player. Anyway, all right. Possible future Hall of Famers. We already talked about Dirk Nowitzki, obviously will be going in. Vince Carter, 95%. Sean Marion, 75%. Amare Stoudemire, forgot he was a Maverick.
70%. Yeah, hold on a minute. Yeah. You've made a mistake, Jason. You are listing Amare Stoudemire as a Dallas Maverick, and I am googling that. Oh my God! Okay,
yeah,
Jason, I'd like to apologize. So, Amare Stoudemire apparently was a Dallas Maverick, so I would like to rescind my complaint and please carry on. Yes, with
I forgive you,
Mavericks legend Amare Stoudemire.
Yeah. And then of course, very memorable stint with the Mavericks or Rajon Rondo.
I guess, one of these photos I'm looking at is Amare Stoudemire high-fiving Rajon Rondo. And I'm like, oh, God. oh, dear.
By the way,
what's going on?
Kyrie Irving is at 84%. So he was traded to the Mavericks after.
Of course.
We did these notes. So, yeah. So now we've got he's their best chance for one for, you know, after a Dirk for a while. So. All right. What if scenarios? I think you should go with yours first.
Let me go with mine. So I've obviously I've followed the Mavs for a lot of years. People that listen to the show know about that. I've been a Mavs fan for a while. And the two that stand out to me, the what ifs are making it to the NBA Finals in 2003, which is a little different than, you know, maybe, you know, we'll talk about 2006 here in a little bit and some other stuff. But I think that 2003 team, I think we see a very different NBA if that Mavericks team does make it to the finals, and even more so if they do win it, which is very possible in 2003. They can beat that Nets team for sure. You know, they were a Don Nelson team, mostly in theory only at this point. Like, yeah, you think of Don Nelson Mavericks. All right, here's, you know, there's no D in Dallas, yada, yada. They were seventh in pace that year. Their defensive rating was actually ninth in the league, which was true of a lot of those, you know, teams, as everybody kind of went, oh, they don't play in defense. And it's like, well, no, they just score a lot of points. You know, now we're smarter basketball fans now, and we know what defensive rating and per 100 possessions or whatever. But this team was actually a good defensive team. It wasn't that super crazy in pace. Dirk was playing great. Nash was playing great. They were a deep, deep team. And they played kind of smallish. And they took a ton of threes, especially for that era. I wonder if that team does make the finals and win it, do we see the NBA adopt and embrace the three a little bit earlier? Do they kind of say, well, hey, here's a team that, you know, isn't that focused on defense and is led by a European guy and a Canadian point guard or whatever, and they shoot a bunch of threes. Like, I think that does transform the NBA a little bit, as opposed to you can't win without defense in the playoffs, which happened time and time again, and especially when the Spurs would come and beat them in the Western Conference Finals or whatever, and be like, all right, no, see, that's the team that you need to be. You need to be a team like that. Whereas it would have been fun if that 2003 team had done it. And then the problem too is then the Mavericks freaked out after that season and traded for Antoine Walker and traded for Anton Jameson, and then went to a team that just played zero defense and said, you know what, fuck, you know, we're not going to even try to play defense. Let's just go nuts, and it obviously ruined a lot of stuff from that point forward. But I think it's a really fun team. I'd be very interested to see if that team did make it to the finals. Then, of course, winning in 2006, that would have been really cool for Dirk's legacy as well. He gets there, he goes up on the Heat, and then obviously he chokes, and that kind of causes a lot of people. The team chokes more than anything. Dwayne Wade's more basically good. That's what plays into it more than anything. But that would have been fun for him to win that 2006 title. In 2011 was great, but him winning in 2006 would have given him a title a little bit earlier in his career, and possibly does open the door for him winning more down, you know, later in his career, maybe one or two more. And that might change his legacy a little bit, because Dirk, I don't know about what you think about this, but Dirk still feels like kind of underrated to me. Like, I don't think people quite appreciate how good he was for as long as he was.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you might be right. And I don't necessarily think you're wrong. I mean, he had a credible, like, for a while was credibly, you know, at times was probably the best offensive player in the game for, you know, like a good amount of time. You know, I don't know if he was ever clearly the best player in the game. I mean, you know, because by the time he got to that level, LeBron was close to that level. I mean, but he was certainly close, and it was certainly an argument. And then, I mean, like, he was the best player in a series that included LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. So that's certainly something special. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. It's a little bit it's just one of those things that's really hard to judge. I mean, there was so many, like, also he played the same time as Kevin Garnett, and he played the same time as Tim Duncan.
Right.
And all of those guys, you know, played, you know, the similar same position, where stalwarts played forever
in the same conference a lot of times too.
Yeah basically just redefined in different ways the game, and, you know, particularly what a big man did in the NBA, you know, and helped kind of pave the way for how the game is played in modern way. You know, obviously Dirk mostly offensively, Garnett both ways, but particularly defensively, and Duncan just in, you know, I guess kind of
every way possible. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the way that I would say, like, if he had not played at like roughly the same time as Duncan and Garnett, I wonder how he would be kind of viewed as differently, because like all three of those guys kind of like took each other's spotlight at times.
Right.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would honestly agree that I think like Tim Duncan, people don't really realize how, because then you also have, you know, guys like Kobe who you know, take up so much, you know, and I don't mean this in like a bad way, but like he takes up so much oxygen in terms of like who was, you know, a great player in this era. And you have guys like Duncan, who's one of the most accomplished players of all time. And guy like Kevin Garnett, who's just incredible. And Dirk, who's incredible. I mean, and it does still feel like ultimately if you sat most people down and said, hey, who's the best player out of these four, most of the people would probably say Kobe. Yeah, it's just they all kind of played at the same time, and it made it, you know, all fighting
casual fans. Yeah,
and right, Shaq, basically in the same conference too. And hey, there's Shaq as well. So
it takes up a lot of space, and Shaq, like, for that 3 year, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, was just like kind of seemed like clearly above anybody else that was it was going on, and obviously, I mean, Dirk hadn't quite formed into his own yet. He was a good player, but he wasn't quite, you know, at his best. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, that head-to-head, you know, we don't need to get too deeply into that conversation. But, yeah, I don't know how you pick between who was the best player between those five.
No, it's tough.
So many different ways to evaluate who you would say clearly is the best of those five. I don't really have a great way of determining that. So, yeah, we were blessed with so many great players at so many different times. And, yeah, if you play for the Lakers, if you play for a marquee team, and you're iconic in other ways, like – yeah, you're going to take up so much space in that conversation, and it, you know, does sort of take a little bit away from Dirk. But I mean, Dirk certainly appreciated and loved, and obviously just incredible special relationship with Dallas. So, I mean, you know, he certainly gets a lot of due, but does he get completely what he should? Yeah, I'm not totally sure. So mine's not as fun, but it's the late 80s Mavericks, who, you know, in 88 Mavericks, they took the Lakers to seven games in the conference finals, came very close to making the finals. I mean, they had a very deep team, you know, Derek Harper, Rolando Blackman, Mark McGuire, you know, Sam Perkins. They had Detlef Schrempf, who's 25, who was on their deep bench. You know, and then also like a young potential great big in Wright Tarpley, who you was definitely looking at like, you know, at that point is kind of like somebody who, you know, he wasn't great yet, but he was clearly like had the tools and clearly looked like he could become the next great big man. And then unfortunately, you know, drugs and other issues, you know, led to suspensions and, you know, tensions kind of swept the team, and they ended up trading Mark McGuire and getting an old Adrian Dantley. And then things just kind of fell apart. And things really fell apart a couple years later. And, you know, in the early 90s, and they were really, really terrible. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if that team really had like legs to do a whole lot more, but yeah, that's probably, other than what you're, the scenario you put up, that's probably the best one for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, Tarpley being good would have helped a lot, or him keeping it together would have helped a lot. Cause that team was, I mean, they weren't that far off. Are they a Roy Tarpley off? You know, I don't know, but at least it would have been more of a conversation as opposed to like, hey, here's a plucky little team that, you know, makes some okay runs in the playoffs, but ultimately, like, yeah, they have a ceiling and they're clearly not on a level of some of these other teams where, yeah, Roy Tarpley is what he is. And man, he should have that. I mean, he had all the tools for sure to be that guy.
Right.
Definitely would have been interesting to see how they navigate the late 80s. And maybe the fall isn't as precipitous as it is in the early 90s, where it's just like, this is a laughing stock of the league for basically a decade afterwards.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. Ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey. What do you got?
I am going to go. It's got to be Rodzilla, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be Rodman, man.
Yeah. Right. No, I think that's perfect. Yeah, I think that's one of those like, oh, Dennis Rodman played for the Mavericks, and you know, you get a fun conversation about the 12 games that Dennis Rodman played for the Mavericks. You get to make
fun very memorable 12 games. There's always like a highlight. You know, like I follow all these like Instagram accounts or whatever, and it's like Dennis Rodman ejected from a game. It's like, man, I've seen like all of his footage from his Mavericks day, and none of it's good. It's always him like screaming or fighting or taking his shirt off or whatever. And I'm like, man, that guy got all his 12 games worth.
Yeah,
that Mavericks jersey, man.
Yeah, exactly. All right, the ultimate cool kid jersey. I'm going to go with Steve Nash. I think that's pretty.
I'm with you, and what I'm saying, but it's got to be that because he played in a little bit of that. The classic like 90s Mavericks style. I don't want the horse head Steve Nash.
Right.
I don't want that. I want the blue and or green. You know, plain old Dallas. That's all I want. That is the cool jersey. That is a hell of a jersey.
Right. You know, I very much agree with that. Yeah. You definitely do not want the, I think when we talked about Nash with, the Suns, we wanted to have, we wanted the, not the 90s Suns, but the, not the 2000 Suns, but the late 90s Suns.
Yes. You know, yes.
So, all right. The Hornets now. Yes, we got three Hall of Famers who have played for the Hornets. We got Robert Parrish, 155 games, ages 41 to 42, near the end of his career. Got one more stop after that and got a ring with the Bulls. We got Vlade Divac, who played two seasons with the Hornets after being traded for a young Kobe Bryant. And Alonzo Mourning, who began his career with the Hornets and did well to thrive, but decided, hey, maybe Charlotte's not for me. I'm going to go to Miami instead.
Yeah. And he's going to be my what-if scenario here in a minute with Alonzo. So I'll wait a sec, but that's, you know.
All right, fair enough. Hall of Famers drafted or acquired but never played for the franchise. Yeah, we got Kobe Bryant. That didn't work out so well with the for the Hornets. Oh, I mean, they got 2 years of Vlade. It's not too bad. But anyway, possible future Hall of Famers. We got Dwight Howard, 99%. And you're like, oh, yeah, Dwight Howard played for the Charlotte Hornets. That's right. Yeah.
I do remember that, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't I don't know why I do, but I do unfortunately remember that one.
Yeah, yeah. You got Tony Parker at 94%, who, of course, as we mentioned, 2023 finalist. And we got Kemba Walker at 15%.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be adding to that resume anytime soon. But.
No. I think that might be it for Kemba. And Baron Davis, 2.3% for Baron. So also not adding to his case much either. So.
No. But if Baron Davis made the Hall of Fame, I would.
I'm not opposed to it. Yeah, if the committee wants to decide, you know what? Let's put fucking Baron Davis in. I'd be like, hell yeah, let's put Baron Davis.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Why not? What? Who cares? It's the best Hall of Fame. Do you honestly care that much about the best Hall of Fame? Screw it. Put Baron Davis in there. No, put him in the headband. Not. Yeah. Just let's have some fun.
Yeah. So. That would be delightful. All right. So you do your better what if scenario first.
Yeah, so my what if scenario is, and I'm going to avoid the low hanging fruit of not trade Kobe for Divock. Like, we all know that. Right. We're not doing that. Right. You didn't do it either, I don't believe. No. So good. I'm going to go with trying to make a better effort to keep Alonzo Mourning, because he instantly turned the Heat into true contenders. And the Heat were already pretty good when he went there, but when he goes there, they're like, you know, one of the top teams in the East, because it's Alonzo Mourning. And he's like, went there in his prime to a team that was already good. And the Hornets were kind of the same. They were slowly making their way up the NBA ladder. And obviously they had struggled for a bit. I mean, they you know, early 90s, 92, 93, they're pretty close. I mean, they're starting to feel like they're there. Things kind of fall off a little bit in the mid 90s, but then they start kind of getting it back on track, and Mourning starts becoming a very, very good player. And then, he leaves, he goes to the Heat, and he teams with, you know, Riley and Tim Hardaway and all those guys, and it takes the Heat to a completely other level. And I was pretty heartbroken as a kid too, because I loved Alonzo Mourning and I loved the Hornets. And just why did you make a better effort to keep Alonzo Mourning in his prime? And really, just the biggest what if is just not have one of the shittiest owners in the NBA would have probably helped a lot of these what if scenarios that we're going to bring up here in a little bit. But like, what the hell, like. That was a good team for so long with a great fan base, and he just decimated it from a bunch of different things. But your what if scenario is going to play into that a little bit too, which is kind of interesting. I think a fact that I think a lot of people are not going to believe when you say it.
Right. So as you mentioned, the Hornets kind of, you know, by like 95, it was their first season. They won 50 games. They, you know, made the playoffs two of the prior seasons. And then, and again, I don't think they really want to trade Alonzo Mourning. It was kind of like the writing on the wall, like they were going to lose him if they didn't trade him. So they, they kind of were forced to do it. But but again, if like I would say, hey, maybe don't trade Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson in successive seasons if possible, because you're two stars and they were, and they're both really good players. Now, the Hornets actually did pretty well in those, because, they got Glenn Rice, they got Anthony Mason, the Kobe trade ended them Vlade Divac, and they actually had their two, it's still best seasons in franchise history with 54 wins and 51 wins. With those three guys, with Vlade, with Anthony Mason, with Glenn Rice. So, I don't know. Maybe keep Vlade for longer, because he did pretty well with the Kings. So that might have been good if they would have been able to pull that off. That might have kept them in the upper rung for a while.
They made out pretty good on both those trades. Like, obviously, keeping Alonzo Mourning would have been great, but they got, Glenn Rice back, and Glenn Rice was good. Yeah. And they, keeping Larry Johnson would have also been good. But they got Anthony Mason back, and, they trading Kobe Bryant would have been bad, but they always got returns.
Right.
But then they were the Hornets and George Stitt was their owner. So
and they'd won down here in nine, or like they were basically 500 in the lockout season. And then they traded Glenn Rice for Eddie Jones, and they actually were good again for a couple of years.
Right.
And then things really started to go bad with George Sin's reputation, and then they end up moving, pretty soon after that. So
they just tinkered. They were just tinkering so much, and I don't know why they were just always in a. The real reason was probably they just didn't want to pay their guys or whatever. But it was they were always tinkering, and it's like got the talent, man. Just maybe run with it for a little bit, see what happens.
Run with it a little bit, But I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's hard to believe. But like, I think early '90s, I think the Hornets were a cooler franchise, at least if you were a kid, than the Heat were. I mean, they definitely colors and the style and the players they had, especially Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson was like a huge, obviously he was like awesome and had that like perfect, like, had that like UNLV attitude and was just like, the grandmama stuff was like the perfect, like kind of like a cartoon, but also a badass reputation. And, you know, for me at that age, that landed with me so much. And yeah, I was kind of like a bit of a Hornets fan just because.
No, they were a global brand. I mean, they were a brand more than almost any other team at that time. I mean, if you weren't around then, you might not comprehend just how much of a brand that team was. Like that iconic logo, the iconic colors, it fit perfectly for the time. Like they were a cool team. They had Bogues, they had Mourning, they had Johnson. Like it was so fun. And they just, ignited that reputation and lit it on fire and threw it off a cliff as fast as possible. And by the end of the decade, they're like kind of lame. And then by the mid 2000s, it's like, the Hornets. It's like, you wouldn't believe that in 1992, it was like, you know, running around in Chicago, like I saw more Hornets gear than I saw Bulls gear because the Hornets were cool as hell. Like, people loved it. I mean, because they were so cool. Like the Bulls were cool, obviously, but like, man, like teal purple with that Hornet logo, like they were great, you know?
I mean, Hornet, and then there was a lot in Ohio too. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I'm in Columbus, so Cleveland, people don't naturally cheer for Cleveland teams in Columbus. They do sometimes, but it's not like automatic because we've got Cincinnati, you got Pittsburgh. You know, there's fans of different cities when you're in Columbus. But yeah, Hornets were definitely, up there in the Bulls in terms of the most popular teams, you know, up that time for sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, ultimate hipster jersey. Gonna go with Robert Parrish, although I don't think Tony Parker, you know, about to be in the Hall of Fame, is also a pretty good choice. So,
for sure. I feel like I could give an answer because all three are cool as hell, and I'm gonna cop out on both of these. I can't show it. You got Robert Parrish. That's a cool ass jersey. You got Vlade Divac. Right. That's cool too. Like that's gonna work for hipster or cool guy. And Alonzo Mourning, man. You walk into a building with an Alonzo Mourning Hornets jersey, like you're a cool dude. You might be a hipster, but you're also a cool dude. So it's like I can't shoot. I refuse to comply.
Yeah. All right. You refuse to comply. Fair enough. Okay. I was gonna go Divac for the cool kid jersey. I will say that the Parrish one is the uniforms were they were still pretty good with Divac during that time, but they were better early 90s than the late 90s ones they made were not necessarily an improvement. So
they got a little too busy. Yeah, they got a little too crazy there.
Yeah. So, all right. Miami Heat, we got next. All right. So we've got Gary Payton, Ray Allen, Shaquille O'Neal, Tim Hardaway, Chris Bosh, and Alonzo Mourning on this team. So they have never drafted or acquired a Hall of Famer who did not play for the franchise. And they're future Hall of Famers. Dwayne Wade, as we mentioned, 2023 finalist. LeBron James, yeah, probably going to make the Hall of Fame.
I think he's got a good chance, yeah.
Yeah. Kyle Lowry, 86%.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah. Sean Marion, 75%. Kevin Love, who is now a Heat, 73%. Amari Stoudemire, who we have, by the way, played for the Heat, 73%. Jimmy Butler, who's 71%. And Joe Johnson, aforementioned, 50%. So, and then best what-if scenario, for me, it's like the Heat have pretty much lived a charmed existence thanks to Pat Riley's blood sacrifice of Bimbo Cole. So, yeah, really not anything – really couldn't have gone better for the Heat.
That my thing, too, is the same. It's like, fuck you. It's like, you know, all in all, they've had an insane amount of success given their time in the league. They've pretty much always been good. They had their first 3 years in the league where they weren't that good, and then they were good. Then they had a very brief period in the early 2000s, and then a few years in between, but – no, they're just a bit good. And I guess the biggest what if would be, you know, winning that last title. The last one with the big three Heat instead of losing to the Spurs. Like it felt like that team was done and it was over and everybody was ready to move on. But does he still leave if they win that title? Does LeBron still say, you know what? I've done all I could do here. It's time for me to go back to Cleveland. Or is that harder to do? It felt like it was easier to do. They got there. They lost. It was like, all right, guys, I did what I was going to do, but now it's time to go back to Cleveland. Whereas if he wins that title, I don't know. I've always wrestled with that. Would it be easier for him to say, okay, we've really done all we could do. Now I'm going to go back to Cleveland. I don't know. I've always wrestled with would it have been easier or harder for him to have left and go back to Cleveland? Was that going to happen no matter what if they won or lost? It kind of felt like yes, but I do think it becomes a little harder maybe if what if they just blow the doors off the Spurs and they win in four games? It's like, oh. You know, it seems kind of weird to be like, all right, bye. That's enough of that. Like, wouldn't that be kind of addicting to be like, man, we got a good thing going here. Let's just keep this going. But it didn't feel like that in the moment. It felt like it was all kind of coming to an end.
I mean, they're pretty exhausted. It seemed like they were sick of each other. So, yeah, it's hard to – I mean, yeah, could they have, like, eked out a series against the Spurs if things had gone differently? I could see that, like, blowing the doors off and, like, being, like, happy with each other. That just doesn't seem totally feasible.
Right, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, yes. All right, so all right, ultimate hipster jersey. I guess Bosch in a weird way, because he's kind of underappreciated, and people are still sometimes like, LOL, Chris Bosch, you know, like not in the same conversation as Wade and LeBron, which, like, yeah, I guess not. But at the same time, he was really important for that team. So there's not really a good choice other than that to me.
Yeah, and that's kind of the reason why I chose him as the cool kid, because I think you and I, we have different interpretations, which is fine. That's what makes this fun. Yeah. To me, the cool kid jersey would be Bosch, because you're like, no, respect Chris Bosch, man. You know what I mean? Right. Like I'm telling you, the guy was better than you think he was. You know, here's his numbers, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I like that. So I like Bosch as the cool kid jersey. I went with Gary Payton as the hipster jersey. It's kind of hard to come up with a hipster, you know, Heat jersey. They're all kind of they're all fine and. Yeah, so I went Payton with the hipster and I went Bosch with the cool kid for some of the same reasons you went with him as the hipster jersey.
Right. Yeah, I would say, I mean, Payton for me, like, there's no LOL. Yeah, I think of the hipster one as kind of like, oh, I'm trying to get a laugh here by getting this jersey on. Where the cool kid one for me is more like, oh, I'm trying to prove how cool I am by having this one on. So, but yeah, Hardaway for the cool kid jersey, just because, like, it's, you're sort of like, oh, like Tim Hardaway, I appreciate Tim Hardaway, look how, like, cool I am. Although Warriors one would definitely be cooler than Heat one, but, you know, you could definitely get both on there. So all right, let's go next to the Magic. So we've got Dominique Wilkins, 27 games in the lockout season to end his career. We got Patrick Ewing, 65 games in the 2002 series. And we got Ben Wallace before going to the Pistons, had a pretty strong year with the Magic. We got Grant Hill, of course, who, of course, had some good moments in Orlando, despite, you know, sort of all the injuries and things that he dealt with during his time there. We have Tracy McGrady, who only played four seasons with the Magic, but was MVP level, just incredibly awesome there. We got Shaquille O'Neal, of course, who played four seasons with the Magic, leading them to the finals. Very interesting. Tracy McGrady and Shaquille O'Neal both played 295 games in their 10 years with the Magic and only are 0.1 win share away from each other. McGrady 48.2 and Shaq 48.3. So
yeah, that's why as close and couldn't be two you know, diametrically different players, Shaquille O'Neal and Shaq. But yeah, it's, you know, over these time periods, yeah, exact amount of games and you know, McGrady just 0.1 away from Shaq in terms of win shares is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it gives you some idea of McGrady's impact. It's probably a little bit underrated given that, you know, it was the Magic and a bit of a not dead time exactly for the NBA, but, like, you know, less glamorous time than than Shaq's period with the Magic. So. All right, Hall of Famers who were drafted or acquired but never played for the franchise. Chris Webber, of course, who was traded for Penny Hardaway and several draft picks. And Chauncey Billups, who was, I have to relook. I do not exactly remember how Chauncey Billups was associated with the Magic, but he apparently was on their roster and never played for the franchise. I'm going to relook that one up and make sure that I'm accurate there. But future Hall of Famers, we got Dwight Howard, 99%. Vince Carter, 95%. My best what if scenario is, like, hey, let's say Dwight Howard is like 15% more mature.
He makes 90, seven less fart jokes a week. Right. Like, much do things change?
You know? How much better are the Magic if he's like 15% more mature?
So yeah, and not just like always trying to get traded. Like, people don't remember how exhausting like the Dwight Howard stuff was to the point where. Again, you know, it you get to the Stan Van Gundy moment that everybody does remember, with, you know, Stan Van sipping on the Diet Pepsi or whatever it was, and, you know, him talking about Dwight, and Dwight's right there like, hey, what are you guys talking about? It's like, oh, nothing. We're just, you know, it's just, it was so exhausting for so long, and it sucks because, yeah, Dwight, if he just stayed there and played, you know, things would have probably been, you know, so much better. And for me, my what if scenario is just, you know, the two huge ones are winning that 95 title and what happens from there. You know, does Nick Anderson remain good? He nails those free throws, no problem. I'm Nick Anderson, I'm good. And, you know, it wasn't immediately after that he fell off, you know, in terms of his career, but it was very quickly, you know, people kind of think that he missed those free throws and that was kind of it for him. It wasn't, but it was kind of a thing that always lingered and always questioned and always, you know, and it just started to kind of wear on him a little bit. You know, so Nick Anderson remains good. I mean, Shaq, does he stay? You know, you have to imagine that it changes a lot of their history. They're probably like, no, Shaq, we're going to give you all the money you want. You helped us win a title, you know, and we're still a very new franchise and we're NBA champions or whatever. Like, you know, yes, it seems more plausible they would just give him a giant bag of money, which again, they should have just given Shaquille O'Neal a giant bag of money. But, you know, at that time it was like, well, he hasn't won a big one yet, or he can't do it in the playoffs. It's like, okay, maybe just pay Shaq a giant bag of money. Don't let him go. Okay, he's in the Lakers now, and now he's can't be stopped. All right, great. Perfect. Yeah, right. You have to imagine all that, you know, some of that changes their history. And then the big one is just Grant Hill staying healthy. And sure, they in a weird way kind of backed into a super competitive team with McGrady. Then they brought in Grant Hill and shit. They maybe even brought in Tim Duncan if they let his family on the damn plane, but they were like, no. We're not gonna pay Shaq a big load of money, and Tim, you want your family to be on our plane? No, thank you, sir. Like,
yeah,
take that elsewhere. And he's like, I will. I'm going to go to San Antonio again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was ever confirmed that that was the reason, but that's kind of the rumored thing or whatever. But yeah, if Grant Hill's, you know, his foot stays on, he's still in his prime. Combined with McGrady, that's a real tough team in a very weak East.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You almost have a chance to have like the big three. Something that would have been pretty much the equivalent of the Heatles of that time, with Duncan, McGrady, and Hill all being on the same team. I mean, that if you get a chance at that, that changes a lot about NBA history for sure. And that's a potentially dominant team. Even if Hill doesn't get healthy, you have McGrady and Duncan together.
Any scenario where it's not just McGrady and like Gordon Giracek or whatever, you know what I mean? Like if it's McGrady and Hill, if it's McGrady and Duncan, I mean, if it's all three, forget it. I mean, they're dominant in the East, but yeah, just any other combination of those two is better than, you know, Pat Garrity and Tracy McGrady and them still being pretty good with Pat Garrity and Tracy McGrady, like they're still a pretty good team. So yeah, you can imagine things would have gotten a lot better overall, but you know.
Yeah. Oh, regardless. By the way, Chauncey Billups was traded along with Ron Mercer and Johnny Taylor to the Magic on February 1st, 2000 for Chris Gatling, Tariq Abdul-Wahad, and a future first-round draft pick. But Billups never played for the Magic. So another guy that
Chauncey Billups
could have gotten. Yeah, what? Just keep Chauncey Billups. That would have been all right. Yeah. So, yeah. All right, so ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey. Yeah, you got to go with Patrick Ewing, although it's extremely sad.
In the most depressing way possible, yes. Right. You got to go with Ewing.
So, all right. This is very partisan for me, but the ultimate cool kid jersey, I am going to go with – oh, I'm sorry. Actually, wait a minute. Did you answer Dominique? Or did we switch it by accident? You have Dominique on here.
I have Dominique. I don't know about you. You got McGrady in here, but that's a wrong answer.
All right. Yeah. Why did? Well. All right.
Because the answer is always Dominique, and every time it's been an option, I've went with Dominique because it's Dominique Wilkins. Like.
All right. Yeah. So I was going. I went with Shaq or McGrady. I love Dominique too. I will say that like the Shaq era uniforms are way better to me than the McGrady. Dominique era.
True. Yeah.
So that adds a little bit for me for Shaq, but all right. The Timberwolves. All right. Well,
this is gonna be a big one. Strap in, folks. Here we go.
We got Kevin Garnett.
Okay. And
that's it. That's it. All right. The Hall of Famers who
Wally Zerbiak? Are you sure? You want to check and run those numbers one more time for me?
We'll double check. All right. All right, so Hall of Famers drafted or acquired, but never played. We got Ray Allen. Possible future Hall of Famers who played for the Timberwolves. We got Chauncey Billups to 84%. Kind of weird that he's not in. I mean, there's some off-court stuff maybe that's accounting for that. But
the off-court stuff doesn't mean he's coaching in the NBA. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, he's the head coach. I agree with you, but I'm like, it clearly doesn't stop him from getting like one of the most premier jobs you know, sports. But okay,
Fair point. We got Kevin Love at 73%, Jimmy Butler at 71%, and by the way, Carl Anthony Towns at the moment is at 10%. Obviously, he can build upon that, but we'll see.
I would have said yes, but
it's been a little weird there lately.
Yeah, so it has.
All right, so I will. So my what if scenario is basically like, hey, what if you have Ray Allen and Garnett in Minnesota together instead of trading Ray Allen first Stephon Marbury. That would have been all right. Hey, maybe you could have drafted Paul Pierce while you were at it, you know, a couple years later.
Yeah, they could have created it. Pick three my ass. Yeah. It would have been in Minnesota.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm not saying that would work as well. And obviously there's a whole lot of
Glenn Taylor involved.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that would have actually ever happened or worked out, but that's why it's a what if scenario. So
for sure. Mine is just, you know, Stephon stay. Like you said, you know, don't trade Stephon Marbury don't trade Ray Allen for Stephon Marbury. Well, you know, just keep Stephon Marbury. Just, you know, find a way to, you know, to pay. It's Stephon Marbury, and obviously his career went in many, many different directions. But that team felt like it was right on the cusp. But if you can get Marbury to kind of buy in and pay him the, you know, what he thinks he's worth or whatever, that's a fun team. But more than that, just, you know, don't fuck up like a decade worth of drafts to back channel acquire Joe Smith. Like, what are you doing? Why are you like, you know what? We can do this. No one's going to care. It's fine. It's Joe Smith. Like, and even with those scenarios, all those scenarios where Stephon Marbury leaves and they basically can't draft anybody for a decade, they still made it to the Western Conference. You know what I mean? Like, they still made deep runs in the Western Conference and right on the doorstep at the NBA Finals. Man, if they make at least one with Marbury all in or some actual draft capital, like I could definitely see that. I mean, that team was so good because Garnett was so good that all the other stuff that they fucked up around it didn't matter because he was still that good. So I don't know, man. It just don't mess up. You just do something good in acquiring players or drafting players for like a decade. And that's my what if, because things just are totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. All right, so ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey, who do you got?
I'm going to go off board here. No, Kevin Garnett, because there's only one, so I guess I have to choose Kevin Garnett, right?
All right, yeah. I don't know, Johnny Flynn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, all right. Ultimate Hoopin jersey. Yeah, right.
Okay, you had to qualify probably for Johnny Flynn. Probably not. So I thought long and hard about this one. Cool Kid jersey, Kevin Garnett. I'm going Kevin Garnett.
All right, I'm going to go Pooh Richardson. Is he in the Hall of Fame?
That would rock, yeah.
Yeah? That'd be cool. All right. We'll check that. Okay. We got the Raptors now. And we got three. We got Hakeem Olajuwon, who played in the 2002 season. We got Tracy McGrady, began his career there. And we have Chris Bosh, who played his first seven seasons with the Raptors before moving on to the Heat. Hall of Famers that were drafted or acquired but never played for the franchise. Alonzo Mourning refused to report after the trade, the Vince Carter trade. And so ended up going back to Miami and living his best life in Miami. Our possible future Hall of Famers, we got Vince Carter, 95%, Kyle Lowry, 86%, Chauncey Billups at 84%, Kawhi Leonard at 78%. I think he's more probable than that, but Sean Marion, 75%. And by the way, DeMar DeRozan is at 21%. So, all right. What is your best what if scenario, Rich?
My what if scenario is Vince Carter hits that shot. And, you know, he's not a Hall of Famer yet. He obviously will be. So I'm adding him into this here. 95%. Sure. He'll be in there at some point. He hits that shot, goes to the conference finals. It changes so much with that team and its history. And they might still lose, you know, they might lose in the conference finals to the Milwaukee Bucks or whatever, but that's fine. It changes the history. It changes that team's relationship with Vince. You know, they finally moved past it, I think, in recent years, but it was real bad there for a while. And there was also he goes to get his diploma that day. So then it's like, oh, he's not competitive enough. And it ruined that entire franchise and everything that was and everything that entire Vince run is just so soured because that shot goes off the rim. And then it's like, this guy's a failure. He doesn't compete enough. He doesn't want to be here. He doesn't, and everything was so great before that. And then it was so bad afterwards. And it's just like, man, if he hits that shot, even if they lose in the conference finals, it's still, it changes so much of that team's history.
Yeah. For me, I mean, that there's definitely that. I mean, even before then, like if they're able to keep if they understand what they have in McGrady, they're able to keep McGrady and Carter together. And I mean, that may dynamic may not work for other reasons, but that's obviously, you know, that's a huge one right there because they didn't get anything for McGrady. And then he blossomed into an MVP level player while, you know, they were looking for a guy to compliment Carter. So,
there was always that. They're like, man, we need to find a guy that we can match with Vince Carter. And it's like, that guy would have been good. And we had him. But anyway, regardless. Well,
instead, they got Hakeem Olajuwon for a year. So ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey is Hakeem. So I don't have the negative connotations with Hakeem.
No. I know some people do and they shouldn't because he was he was fun on that team, and he was done, and everybody knew he was done, and it's okay. Yeah. It wasn't depressing. It was like, hey, here's Hakeem Olajuwon, veteran presence. It wasn't like, oh God, he's still playing. It's like, oh yeah, all right, you know what? Yeah, let's do this. And he played decent. Like, he had 61 games. He didn't feel decrepit. Right. Like, this is not Patrick Ewing on the Sonics. Like, people attribute that to that, and I don't think that's fair.
All right, ultimate cool kid jersey. I'm gonna go with McGrady. I think that one's I think that's the coolest one out of these.
I'm with you. It's McGrady, or I'm double dipping with Hakeem there, because that's cool as hell. Rolling up with like the purple dinosaur Hakeem Olajuwon jersey. That's a pretty tight jersey, but
I will give you that one. All right, we got the Grizzlies. All Allen Iverson.
I howled when I got to this part of the notes, and I was like, oh, my.
All right, we got the only Hall of Famer who's played for the Grizzlies at the moment is Allen Iverson, who is played three games for the Grizzlies in the 2010 season. Didn't go great, surprisingly enough.
No, it did not. I think that's – It didn't go. All right.
The Hall of Famers who were drafted or acquired but never played, or Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers, Dwight Howard. In the 2019 offseason, he went from Washington to Memphis to the Lakers. This is the second offseason in a row that he was traded to a team that released him. So, fun times. Kevin Love, 73%. He was drafted but then traded for OJ Mayo. Is that right? Yeah, that sounds
right. Yes. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. There you go. Rajon Rondo.
Not a great trade.
60%. In the 2021 offseason, he had a similar path where he went from the Clippers to the Grizzlies to the Lakers. Did not play for the Grizzlies. So, possible future Hall of Famers who have played for the franchise. We got Vince Carter at 95%. We got Pau Gasol, who's a 2023 finalist, of course, listed at 93% in the probability. Kyle Lowry, who is at 86%. By the way, Mark Gasol is at 4.2%. Zach Randolph is at 0.9%. And Mike Conley is at 0.6%. More on Mike Conley in a bit. So, best what-if scenario.
Yeah, mine is, tough given the criteria that we're doing here. And I guess it's just keep Lowry. I mean, I don't think that much changes with their friend, but if we're doing like, hey, Hall of Famers, it's like, it's the Grizzlies. I don't know. They just, keep Lowry and he is good, I suppose. It's fine. I just don't think much. Yeah. There's not really many what if scenarios with the Grizzlies. Maybe don't trade OJ Mayo for Kevin Love, but even then, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Like,
I don't know if that changes things.
No, I really don't. Yeah. I'm trying to think in my head of like, what can I change with the Grizzlies history? And there's not a ton that I can change that I think really drastically alters their franchise history.
Right. And if they were to keep Powell, but they weren't really in a point where keeping Powell made sense. So
I would agree. And because I thought of that too, and I'm like, it was like time for them to kind of try to something else for a while. And it led to some pretty fun years, obviously, afterwards with the grit and grind or whatever. So I keeping Paul at that time would have been fine, but they had already kind of reached their limit with that. So I don't know. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of what ifs. I feel bad for the Grizzlies. It's like and it's not like the Heat thing where it's like, there's no what ifs because they're just so good all the time. It's like, I don't know. It's just the Grizzlies. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, they've been pretty good a lot of the time, but obviously not at Heat level. But so
there's not like
one
or two little moves that you're like, if they had just done that, they would have been, they're not really close, in any year that I can think of.
Yeah, they've been like conference finals-ish and very, very good, but never to a point where, they do that one thing that they have a good chance at a championship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they keep Lowry over Conley's or maybe if they keep them both, I guess. Are the grit and grind Grizz, are they even grittier or are they grindier or are they grizzlier?
They might be grizzlier. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Kyle Lowry had to grow a big beard or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. They would have been definitely grittier. Right. I think they would have been less grindy and I think they would have been a little grizzlier.
Because Conley's kind of like a chill, normal presence. Like, do they need because they've got like a bunch of like personalities there? Is it better to have Conley who's more of like a calming influence?
Yeah, that's true. Because Lowry gets real wound up all the time. That probably wouldn't have gone well.
That might have been too much. That might have been too much grit. So
that's true. Also, maybe too gritty, not enough grindy, and less. Yeah. I forget now what I said, but that is an interesting point. That Conley was just kind of like all the other guys are just being just absolute clowns, and there's like Mike Conley, professional athlete Michael Conley or whatever, who's just like, come on, guys, let's get this together. Where Lowry would have been complaining and fighting and going nuts and stuff. Yeah, that's I think you're right. That maybe wouldn't have helped. It may have hurt actually.
Right. But then again, like, okay, if they go with Lowry and they get rid of Conley, if like Conley goes on the Lowry's career path, like he bounces around, he ends up with the Raptors, like, does he have more acclaim? Because if you look at their career numbers,
for sure,
they're almost, you know, they're almost identical. But Lowry has 6 All-Stars to Conley's 1. Some of that is because Lowry was in the East and Conley was in the West. And Lowry has 1 All-NBA nod. You know, Conley never got 1. Plus, of course, Lowry has the ring. Now, I'm not saying if you're going to ask me who's better between Lowry and Conley, I would probably pick Lowry. But I wouldn't pick Lowry to the point where I think Lowry's like 86% Hall of Fame probability and Conley is 0.6%. Like,
Right. I don't feel like they should be that far. No, yeah, yeah. I 100% agree. In my mind, like, they're pretty similar, but yeah, then you look at that number, you're like, holy shit, wow. And it's all because the Black Ink, you know, the accolades, I should say, with Kyle Lowry being an All-Star, being, you know, making it. Yeah. So it's all those where, I think that's an interesting scenario there.
Yeah. So anyway, ultimate Hall of Fame hipster jersey. Yeah, we're going to go with Iverson. I don't think.
Yes, I am also going to go with Allen Iverson. So.
Yeah. And now, cool kid. I'm assuming Powell's getting in, so I guess I'm going to go with Powell. Although I guess people who don't know their numbers might get confused with being Mark. So I don't know.
It's true. But, yeah. Well, that actually works both ways because you could, like, you know, be like, no, it's you know, whatever day, whatever suits you that day, you could say, no, it's a Paul Gasol. No, it's a Mark.
There you go.
I guess Iverson again by default. It's either Iverson or Gasol, or I guess, you know, Vince Carter, if he eventually gets in, I guess a Vince Carter Grizzlies jersey is kind of fun, I suppose, right? Is it? Like, No, it's not. It's not that fun. It's not that fun, is it?
Yeah, right.
He wasn't that fun. Well, no, actually, no. He was kind of fun with the Grizzlies, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
Like, the Vince Carter fun thing went like this. I'm gonna lay out when Vince Carter was fun and when he was not fun. I can do it very quickly. Toronto, fun. First half of Toronto, fun. Second half of Toronto, not fun at all.
No.
New Jersey net, I don't think he was fun in the Nets. What do you think?
He was really good on the Nets, but I'm not sure he was that fun. I think there were maybe some times he was fun, but I think it was more unfun than
I would agree. Yeah. So okay. I'm going not fun for the Nets. Not fun at all on the Magic.
No.
51 games for the Phoenix Suns, not fun. Nobody remembers any of those. No. Definitely not fun with the Mavericks, but then got fun with the Memphis Grizzlies, because that's when he was just like, you know what? I could stay in the league for another 10 years if I just shoot threes and don't care about my numbers. And then he did stay for another 5 years. So fun on the Grizzlies, fun on the Sacramento Kings, and Jason, you'll love this, the most fun on the Atlanta Hawks.
Extremely fun on the Atlanta Hawks. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
With my all-time favorite game, my all-time favorite like basketball game ever was right before the pandemic.
Right.
The NBA realizes they're going to shut down. The Atlanta Hawks realize they're going to shut down. They realize this is it for Vince Carter, and they just like, there's like a whole game where they're just like trolling him by being like, no, shoot it, come on. He's like, come on. And they're like, no, come on. Like, they all know it's over. It's over for him. It's over for the season. It's over. And they're just, they don't care. And they're just feeding Vince Carter shots at the end of that game and trying to get him, you know, some sort of numbers or something. Just have some fun with him. And I'll always remember that game. And I always remember how sad it was that's how his career ended, but also fun too, because it was just like, yeah, come on, you know, go ahead and, you know, ultimately, he only plays like 12 minutes and shoots like 5 times or whatever. But, you know, they gave him a lot of standing ovations and stuff and really gave him a lot of love in that final game. So,
yeah, he was definitely appreciated there, which was pretty awesome. So, all right, that we're down to one last team. We got the New Orleans Pelicans. No player who's ever played for the Pelicans has made the Hall of Fame. Not yet. So, possibly in the future. We got Chris Paul, who's definitely, I would say, going to go in. Anthony Davis, I'm pretty sure he's going to go in as well. Rajon Rondo, less certain. But by the way, Drew Holiday, we mentioned this before, but it was quite a while ago now, under the Bucks. But Drew Holiday is at 0.3% at the moment, which is worse than Jeff Teague.
This is unbelievable. How is this happening?
Yes. So,
what does Drew Holiday have to do to get better than Jeff Teague? Like, well, he's so much he'll better probably get, at yeah, every he'll probably, part of basketball.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably get there, you know, eventually with more like playoff stuff and more accolades. But
that number has got to get redone. I think we said it at the time. Like, we have to send it to Basketball Reference. Like, you got to redo this number. Yeah. Like, something's wrong with this. Like, it's just, there's no way. And I think what will help, he did make the All-Star team this year, so that might help a little bit.
Sure.
I'm seeing here that he's a two-time NBA teammate of the year. So we got to bake that into that.
Oh, there we go.
Like, there we go. That's going to get him above Jeff Teague. It's like teammate of the year. Oh, come on. Yeah. They don't give those
Jeff
out.
Was never a teammate of the year.
No, Jeff Teague was certainly never a teammate of the year. Yeah, that's gotta bump him up a little bit. So let's whatever that algorithm is, put in teammate of the year and have that really mean a lot, because we need Drew Holiday up there a lot more than he is right now. So
we absolutely
he's made two all defensive teams. Like he's made two first team all defensive teams and two second team all defensive teams, and he's worse than Jeff Teague.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? We are not doing anything good, that's for sure. All right. So, by the way, so New Orleans is not benefit of Hall of Famers. In addition, of course, to what we talked about with the New Orleans Jazz, the New Orleans Buccaneers, you are, of course, as you know, the 1968 ABA Finals runner-up. They had Larry Brown in the Hall of Fame. He played for that team. Doug Moe somehow not in the Hall of Fame, which is kind of wacky.
Oh, wow.
But Larry Brown is, of course, and his coach not as well. I guess he just did. I mean, more as a coach than a player. But Doug Moe somehow not in the Hall of Fame. We need to do something about that.
Well, it helped that Larry Brown played in overalls. Sorry, did he coach in overalls or did he play in overalls?
He coached in overalls. I don't believe he ever played. Well,
we don't know that. I mean, have you watched every New Orleans Buccaneers game?
I have not.
So
I have not watched every. All right, we cannot talk about a Hall of Famer who played for the Pelicans, but we got a bonus topic here. Who is the Pelicaniest player in NBA? So they adopted their current name starting in the 2014 season. So, all right, so here are some players who have played, you know, significant minutes for.
Right, so Chris Paul does not count in this. He is a quote unquote Pelican, but we all know that. New Orleans Hornets.
Right. He's really a New Orleans Hornet. Yes. Not right. A New Orleans Pelican. But so, yeah. So since 2014, we got Anthony Davis. We got Drew Holiday, who are by far the most in minutes, both about 14,000. More recently, we got Brandon Ingram. We got Etuan Moore. We got Dante Cunningham. We got Tyreke Evans. We got Eric Gordon. We got Ryan Anderson. We got Josh Hart. We got Darius Miller. So that's your top 10. Oof. Anybody in that top 10 feel like the most? And I don't think the Pelicaniest has to. Yeah, they have to most best represent the franchise.
I don't feel like it's Davis. Like I'll say right now, no, I don't think Davis is the Pelicaniest Pelican ever. Yeah,
because if they had been great during that time, then sure. But they weren't really great during that time. Right. So I don't think he best represents that franchise. Yeah.
No. And on the flip side, like Drew Holiday doesn't feel like a Pelicaniest player either. Right. Like. I can't eat one more. No, this is tough. This is harder than I thought it was going to be. I was like, well, this is, I mean, Zion is all the way down there at 16 minutes, you know, 16th in minutes play, which is also a damning thing. Yeah. He's always hurt. Right. Never plays. Right. But, man, this is a tough one. This is bad for this team, man. I don't know that any of these men are Pelican-y. Ingram kind of, but he doesn't feel like a Pelicaniest player. And
all right,
Etuan Moore's Eric. Fourth, really? Etuan Moore,
Etuan Moore, yes,
God,
right? We got Jackson Hayes,
Omer Asik, Omer Asik, I'm gonna say it's either Zion or Ingram, but I don't feel good about any of those.
All right, fair enough.
Should be Drew Holiday, but I just like when I close my eyes and I think of Drew Holiday, I don't think of New Orleans Pelican, Drew Holiday.
Right. Okay. All right. So I know that we have a bit on this show where we pretend that they don't exist, but let's put it aside for a moment. Who is the Bobcattiest player in NBA history? So 2000. So
what bit is this? What are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about.
The bit that we pretend that the Bobcats don't exist. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not a bit. It's a real thing.
I don't know about you.
Yes.
The Charlotte Bobcats. Right. Okay.
Right.
All right.
All right. So let's pretend for the moment that there was a franchise just for some reason we're gonna have a hypothetical situation that's
okay yeah yes, and they're like their logo looks like when you start a video game and it's like you want to create a new team and you're like and they're like choose from these five logos and you're like that one looks fine. Like,
all right, Bobcat looks good.
Cat so, looks kind of cool. All right, what are your colors? I don't know, like orange and bluish and kind of purple there. So you're like all right, whatever. Great.
Sounds good. All right, so let's just pretend, for sake, there was a franchise called the Charlotte Bobcats in the NBA from 2005 to 2014. Obviously, ridiculous idea.
Absurd, and it's very poor.
You know, for the fun of it, because it's a funny idea. Let's do that. So, All right. So who would have played during the time? Well, we got Jared Wallace, of course. We got Raymond Felton, of course. We got Emeka Okafor. All of those are over 10,000 minutes. We got Boris Diaw. We got Gerald Henderson, DJ Augustin, Kemba Walker, Matt Carroll, Brevin Knight, and Primo Brejic are your top 10. Yeah, Steven Jackson at 11 there. So, all right, who on this list are you saying would be the Bobcattiest player in NBA history?
The Bobcattiest player in NBA history, I think, is Emeka Okafor.
Ooh, okay. Mm. See, I'm going Raymond Felton.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Big old kind of fat, you know, what I mean? Just kind of filling out that jersey.
Like, I feel like Raymond Felton best represents the effort that was, you know, that was put into that franchise during those years. I feel like Raymond Felton is the Bobcattiest that we could get. So,
I like it. Yeah. I'm going with Okafor only because like they drafted him and it was like, oh baby.
Yeah.
Here we go. And he was like, this incredible college player. And it's like, oh, the Bobcats, look out for them. And he was fine, but he was just, you know, Emeka Okafor. It's just like, all right, that guy's plays in the NBA. You know, he's good. He wasn't bad, but it was just like, yeah, it to me, he also represents the Bobcats because it's like, he existed for a while. Sure. That's kind of cool. Right? Like, it's just, you know, never that good. Never that significant. You're probably not going to remember that he existed. And you're like, oh, all right, well, cool.
So Emeka Okafor actually has a different honor because he is the Horny Pelly Bobbiest player in NBA history. Because on the Bobcats. And then he played afterward from 2010 to 2012 with the New Orleans Hornets. And then played briefly with Washington, was out of the league for 4 years. And then he had a brief comeback in the 2018 season with the New Orleans Pelicans.
Right.
So he played for – so he was never a Charlotte Hornet, but he was a Charlotte Bobcat, a New Orleans Hornet, and a New Orleans Pelican. So
incredible.
I do not believe that there's anyone who can claim to be all four. I could be wrong, but I do not believe that there's anyone who has been a Charlotte Hornet, a Charlotte
that'd
Bobcat,
be tough.
A New Orleans Hornet, and a New Orleans Pelican. So maybe Mecca could make another comeback on the Charlotte Hornets, you know, to close it out. But
I bet he's still in okay shape. He's only 40. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. He's only 40. Yeah, he could run for sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. He could, you know, give him a 10-day. It'd be fine. So, all right. That's it. We did it.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. So there it is. Hall of Famers for every single franchise.
Right. Yeah. So this was fun. This got weird sometimes, but it was fun.
It got very weird, but in a good way.
The best way. The best weird. So yeah. So everyone, if you listen to and enjoy this show, man, we got a whole lot of shows in the backlog. So you go to overandbacknba.com, you're gonna find whatever 300 plus episodes that we have done over the years on many topics. And you know, great thing about our show, even if an episode is, say, 6 years old, because we've been doing this podcast for a long time, because we talk about history, pretty much everything that we talk about is still germane to what happened today. So most, if not all, of the shows in the backlog, you're going to still pretty much get the same context that you would today. So that's the nice thing, is our archive lives, so to speak. So, so check out that, if you're on social media, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. We are at Over and Back NBA. Follow us on those channels and we will share things sometimes. And if you're into what we're doing, please leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform to let other people know that we're great and to help feed our egos, because it's very important to us that we feel good about ourselves. And we can only feel good about ourselves is if we get public acclaim from others. So,
yeah, of course. Yep.
That is about it. If thanks everyone for listening, and we will be back again soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.